Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
In this series of Fall Home Improvement is Proverbs for Parents. I'm excited about this, and remember that we said that as we look at many of the Proverbs on the home, many of them fall under several distinct categories. So our goal and our objective will be to look at these distinct categories and pull one proverb here that really brings out the nugget truth of that category. And we'll also look at some of the other proverbs that go along with it as well. So Proverbs chapter 10 in your Bibles here. Proverbs chapter number 10. Let's look at verse number 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. And the theme that we want to see tonight is this theme of happiness in the home. Father, we do thank you so much for the truth of your word. We thank you that it helps us in our everyday lives. We're thankful for this guide, this manual for how to direct our homes. Now, Father, I pray that you would open our hearts, that we would receive the word of God, that it might be a help to us, whatever stage of life we are in. Well, thank you for it in Jesus' name. Amen. It was around 1870, or the early 1870s, that Dr. Brewster wrote these words that later became the official song of the state of Kansas. Over time, they were adapted just a slight bit, so you might not fully recognize all of them, but he wrote these words. Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the sky is not cloudy all day. His chorus was this: a home, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the sky is not cloudy all day. While many modern American homes look more like those off of Roseanne or the Bundys or something like that, I think most of us desire to have a home that is a happy home. Americans, deep down, desire a good and a proper home. They desire some of the simple aspects of life that have become almost iconic. They've become something that is just stereotyped, maybe in early American television, as they think of what a home might be, with peace and harmony and gentility and things like this. Perhaps they feel in today's time, though, that they're a little too busy, that it's a different generation, it's a different time, and so having happiness in the home is just a little bit more difficult than maybe what they would think in those days. I'm not an expert on Dr. Brewster, the otolaryngologist, that means ear, nose, and throat doctor, who wrote that poem. But historians tell us that, interestingly enough, the man was married 5 times. At least 2 of his wives died of injury or disease. I'm not completely sure on the 3rd one if she died of injury or disease before or after she was connected to him. His 4th wife, he had such a tumultuous relationship with her that he ran away from her and fled to Kansas, where eventually he wrote this poem and married his 5th wife. So maybe the dear doctor himself knew what it was like to desire a truly happy home. So we desire to have a happy home. We want that for our lives. And Proverbs talks about a happy home, or he talks about a home that is in contrast, full of heartache. And we're going to see here tonight that as we discuss happiness in the home, that there are 2 angles from it. There are 2 people that are responsible for happiness in the home. On the one side, there's the angle of the parents. And Proverbs is very clear at the role that we as parents have in making a happy home. On the other side is the role of the children, and how children have a contribution that they can make to happiness in the home as well. So we're going to look at this key proverb, and then we'll look at several others along the same lines and bring out the truth of it, Lord willing. Again, our text will omit the first several words, the Proverbs of Solomon, in our official study here. But it says, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. This proverb divides children into 2 categories. There's another one that's often discussed in Proverbs, and that is the category of simple. But this particular proverb looks at just two categories, a wise son or a foolish son. Now, a wise son is not just a son that is intellectual or has a great deal of knowledge. Because Proverbs 9 and verse number 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. This son, if he's going to be a wise son, is a son that has a relationship with the Lord and has knowledge in his life, has an understanding of life, but then takes that knowledge in life and applies it to how they live their life. It's not that they're just brains or intellectual or have a lot of knowledge in that sense, but that knowledge then impacts how they live their life. What they know impacts how they live. And that is what Proverbs really means when it talks about a wise son. They apply it. We might say they have street smarts. That means they have some everyday common sense. They're not just a bookworm. They're not just intellectual or a scholar that has no clue how to act in life. But their knowledge impacts how they live. And it says here that this father is glad when he has a wise son. A father is glad when he has a son that knows how life's supposed to work and changes his life to live appropriately. Where his son knows the way things should be and knows what he ought to be doing, but then he does it. That's true wisdom. And our text here that it says, it makes a glad father. Now, by making a glad father, the idea is not this, that dad smiles once. The idea of making a glad father is that dad is perpetually glad. It's an ongoing thing. The dad's heart is happy and rejoicing and smiling. It's an ongoing process. He's thrilled. He's rejoicing. This word for gladness here is used to describe, in Exodus 4 and verse number 14, when one brother found another brother. I suppose there are times when you're not glad to find your brother. But generally speaking, if you've lost your brother, you're excited when you found him. There's gladness that is there. The word is used also to describe in 1 Samuel 2, I believe it is, Hannah, when she finally had a son. She rejoiced. There was gladness in the Lord for God giving you this. The word is used in 1 Samuel 19 and verse number 5 of the joy that a king had when his army slaughtered the enemies. Naturally, the king was glad about this. He was happy for the victory. The word is used in 1 Kings chapter 1 of a king being crowned and the people were excited about it. There was a thrill about it. Even in today's society, when something happens with royalty, even though we don't have royalty in America, people are excited about it. There's a gladness. There's an enthusiasm about it. That's what this word means. A wise son makes a glad father. There's rejoicing. There's happiness. There's a thrill that's going on. There's a happy home there. Now, this doesn't mean that a wise son does whatever is necessary to make dad happy. You know, bring me my slippers. I like root beer floats. I like pizza. Doesn't mean the dad has to, or the boy has to run around doing whatever makes his son or makes his father happy. But instead, it means that by the way this son lives his life, his father is in a perpetual state of ongoing happiness. He's glad. He's thrilled because of the way his son is living his life. And listen, this tells me that fathers are thrilled at having sons that are wise. Sons don't have to have necessarily straight A's on their report cards to make their dads really happy. Sons don't have to grow up to have this job that's making them all sorts of money in order to make their dads happy. Sons don't have to marry the prettiest girl on the block to make their dads happy. Sons don't have to be the best in some sport to make their dad happy. Sons don't have to be the strongest or the fastest on the team. Sons don't have to own the biggest company in order to make dad proud of you. The thing that makes dad proud of them, the things that makes their dad happy, the things that makes their dad excited, is when they know the Bible and it impacts their life, they're truly wise. And yes, it's great to get those other things. But a dad is thrilled at his son, even if his job maybe, even if circumstances in life are rough, but he's a wise son. Dad's happy. Dad's thrilled about it. It makes for a happy home. And this challenges me, not only with the sons, but it challenges me as a dad to consider, what am I doing to make my son a wise son? What am I doing to help my son be a wise son? Am I correcting my son? Am I teaching my son proper behavior? Am I providing instruction? Even Proverbs at times, I am amazed, I am just reminded in studying for this series here, how sometimes Solomon and the Proverbs graphically portray horrible outcomes in life. Because Solomon wants you to see, if you go down this road, it's horrible. And he spares no expense at explaining it, what it's like. We're going to do a little bit of that tonight. And we need to do that if we want our children to be wise. They need to understand where the foolish road will take them. So the first part of our proverb tells us a wise son, we know what that is, that's a son who knows what's right, but he does it. He makes a glad father. His dad is happy, his dad's thrilled and excited in an ongoing way. Not just one smile, but an ongoing way. Then there's a second type of son. Let's look at verse number 1 as well. But a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. The other type of son is a foolish son. I want to read to you a few of the things that describe a foolish son from the book of Proverbs. A foolish son, Proverbs 18:2, does not appreciate knowledge and understanding. He doesn't care about instructions. He doesn't listen. 10:23 tells us he loves to cause trouble. We also read that foolishness comes in to his mouth and it also comes out of his mouth. The scriptures tell us that fools are people that can't stand quitting evil. In fact, they love the evil that they're in so much that the Bible describes it in this graphic way, like a dog returning to his vomit. So a fool returns to his folly. Like a dog will vomit up and later come back and eat the very same vomit. So a fool is so persistent in his foolishness that he'll just keep coming back to it and coming back to it, even though it's ruining and harming him in his life. That's what a fool is. Proverbs tells us that fools are know-it-alls. And yet by their actions, they really show how very little they know. Fools, Proverbs tells us, disrespect their parents. Fools pick fights with their mouths. Fools spend up all their money instead of saving it. Fools won't listen when you teach them or correct them. In fact, it's a very terrible end if they continue to follow in that way. Fools, chapter 26, tell us that they make unreliable messengers when you send them out to do something. You can't trust them to do what you sent them out to do. Fools, it tells us, it would be better for you to meet an angry mother bear that's deprived of her cubs than to be a fool. Angry mother bears are not pleasant to be around. Mother bears that have cubs, they'll take on other bears. They'll take on great obstacles if you start messing with their cubs. And yet the scriptures start to tell us that if it would be better for you to meet an angry mother bear than to be a fool. We read in 2 Kings chapter number 2 that two angry female bears met 42 little disrespectful kids that made fun of the servant of God by the name of Elisha. And two bears tore 42 children into pieces and destroyed them. It's not a pleasant thing to meet an angry mother bear, but it'd be better for you to meet one of them than to meet a fool. The Bible says this in 19:10 that the fool should expect a life with no delights and no luxuries. Fools should expect many stripes across their backs. Stripes there are not somebody took a marker and colored stripes on their back. Stripes are so that somebody took a whip and whipped them across their back, and there's all sorts of marks as a result of it. You want to be a fool? You want to think you're a know-it-all? You want to live your life? Then here's what you're going to face. Scriptures tell us in 26 and verse 1, they should expect no honor whatsoever in life. No honors. And when you look at this description here of a fool throughout the book of Proverbs, it's not a pretty picture. When you really meditate upon it, it just breaks your heart to think that someone will live in such a condition to be a fool. No wonder Solomon says here in this proverb that a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Heaviness is what happens, Psalms tells us, when your soul is incredibly melted inside of you and needs strength. Heaviness of the mother doesn't mean that mom's going to gain weight. All right? Heaviness of the mother means that there's a tremendous burden on her back. There's a tremendous burden on her heart. There's a tremendous grief upon her mind constantly as she is so concerned because her son is persisting in the way of foolishness, and she knows that stripes will be on his back. She knows there'll be no honor in his life. She knows it would be better for him to meet a mad bear in the wilderness than to persist in His way. But He won't listen, and He won't change. And no matter how much you try, and no matter how much you work at Him, there's nothing that's going to get through to Him, it would seem. And she is grieved, and she is burdened in her heart, and there's no happiness in the home. There is heartache, rather, because she has a fool for a son. She may cry. She's hurt, not physically, but emotionally. And to understand perhaps just a little bit of the heartache and the pain that this person would go through, I want you to imagine, here's our county, Anoka County. And imagine if we could that some enemy army marched in across the United States to Anoka County and surrounded our county and cut off all roads, all air transportation, all of the waterways so that no one literally could get into Anoka County and no one could get out of Anoka County. They didn't let any Cub bread food trucks or any other bread trucks through. They didn't let any vegetables in. They didn't let any supplies to get in whatsoever. Nothing was allowed in. And after a month or two, all of the food in your cupboards would begin to disappear and you'd begin to get a little bit hungry as mom didn't give you quite as much to eat. And the months would go by and pretty soon you would run out of supplies till you were literally starving because the enemy had cut it off. And then, so to speak, because somebody was so hungry, they flung open the doors, in a sense, and let the enemy right into Anoka County, where we live. And the enemy soldiers began going from house to house and ransacking the houses. Most of the dads would go off to fight, and most of the dads would be killed or captured and executed, and the same fate would probably happen to most of the moms as well. The soldiers would run from house to house, and they would gather up all the kids that they could find, and put them in chains and tie them up, and they would be selling them off to slaves, one brother over here and one sister over here and one brother over here and one sister over here, probably never to see each other again. And before they hauled them all away, though, the soldiers would go through their house and they would just go through and trash it. Anything that they wanted, they had a big truck outside and they would take whatever they want and throw it on there, the piggy banks and the safes with money on them and any of the rich treasures and the bounty in the home. They would take everything that they could possibly want, making a mess of everything else. Walking away, throwing the kids up into some trailer to haul them off to be slaves in another country where they'd probably never return, never see anyone that loved them, their parents were gone. And as the kids and the stuff are hauled away, they can look back over their shoulder and see the home where they grew up, and they can see it in flames as the enemy has just burned down everything. The heartache that you would feel going through an experience like that. Jeremiah uses the exact same word, heaviness, here to describe what the Babylonians did to Judah and how people felt when Babylon came in and trashed Jerusalem like that. And that's exactly what they did. Your heart would be broken. Your heart would be heavy to think of your family, to think of people dying, to be starving, to be sold into slavery, to see everything go up in flames, to lose it all. That sensation of heaviness and heartache and grief is the same sensation that a mother has when she looks out and she has a realization that her child is a fool and is headed down the foolish path. We want happiness in the home, not heartache. The word picture here is so interesting and so exciting. The father here of a wise son is glad. There's happiness. He's so happy he could fly. He's as light as a feather. But on the other hand, the mother of a foolish son is weighted down. One is happy and light and floating on the clouds, and the other one is heavy and heartbroken because of a foolishness in the home. And again, this verse reminds me that there's two aspects. There's the aspect of us parents, to make sure we're doing what we can to rear wise children. And there's the aspect of the children as well, to make sure that they are doing what they should be doing, receiving correction, respecting their parents, watching what they say, not being foolish, but instead being wise to contribute to a happy home. That's the main proverb that we want to look at, but there are several other ones I want to briefly draw your attention to. Go to chapter 15. Proverbs 15. And verse number 20. All of these are on the same theme. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish man despiseth his mother. Again, Proverbs often say things in a special way. They're poems, and so they're written many times where there's two or three lines. And the second line contributes something to the first line. Sometimes it can build and add more details. Sometimes it'll say a contrast. This will be in the first part, but, and then it'll say something different in the second part. But there's always a sense in which they go together and work together. And so here is that similar thought brought out here. We've already seen the first half of the verse in what we studied in Proverbs 10:1, but the second half of the verse describes here a little bit more about this foolish man. A foolish man despises his mother. Additional details are given here as to what would cause her to have this heaviness and what would cause her to have this grief in their life. It is because she has a child that despises her. Now, the word despise is a very simple word for us to understand. It means to treat as if someone has no value, as if they're absolutely worthless. It means to ignore the person. It means to neglect the person. It means to walk all over them, so to speak. Not physically, but things that are often on the ground are not treated with as much respect. It means to treat her as if she's not special, as if she's not wonderful. And to be honest, such an attitude of disrespect often comes out in disobedience. You don't respect the person enough to obey him. What is going to cause heaviness? What is the opposite of a wise son bringing gladness? The opposite of a wise son bringing gladness is a foolish son that despises his mother, despises his parents, treats his parents like dirt, treats his parents like they're no value, disrespects them, doesn't treat them as a special and wonderful person that they are. Let's look at another one. Go to 17:21. Proverbs 17:21. He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow. The father of a fool hath no joy. This proverb really drives it in on the focus of the parents, the responsibility of the parents here, in contributing to happiness in the home by not raising a fool, but rather by raising a wise son. We as parents, if we have struggles in our home with happiness, the responsibility can largely sit on our shoulders. We raised them. It's a very sobering thing here. It says here in the text that he is going to do it to his own sorrow, to his sorrow. The word sorrow here is the same word, is just translated different, as in chapter 10 and verse number 1, translated heaviness. He's going to have that heaviness in life. I think of 1 Timothy, where it talks about the love of money being the root of all evil, which while some have coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Graphic expression there. To poke yourselves through with not one, not two, but many sorrows. This person is bringing the sorrow onto their own life because they have produced a fool in their home. And I find it to be so interesting at the end of the verse, it says, the father of a fool hath no joy. Zero. Zip. Zilch. No joy. There may have been a time in his life when he had a lot of joy when he produced or pursued his own life of sin and did whatever he wanted to go after sin in his own life. But then when he sees those results coming out in his own children, the joy is going to be gone. He may have had a great deal of fun living his own life and neglecting his own family, but when he finds that he's produced a fool, the joy will be gone. He may have worked hard to have the dream job that was going to bring him so much happiness and have the dream home and have the dream salary and all of those things, but when he finds that he's raised a fool, it won't bring the joy that he thought it would bring. And the incredible thing is that the impact of how your children live impacts and overshadows every area of life. The father of a fool hath no joy. It comes up on his mind when he's at work. It impacts his travels. He gets the phone call while he's on vacation. It impacts his retirement. It hurts him in so many ways. The pain is always there. The grief is always there. There may be times when he's trying to enjoy something else, and yet if someone were to bring it up, the heartache would still throb there because the father of a fool hath no joy. And what a challenge and what a burden and what a motivation this is in our own life to think that we have got to raise children that are wise children. Let's look at verse 25. A foolish son is a grief to his father, and bitterness to her that bare him. This word grief here refers to vexing you, to really stirring you, almost in that sense of angering you, provoking you. And yet here also he refers to bitterness. The Jewish people would sometimes use words describing taste to help you understand your emotions. We don't maybe eat a lot of bitter things, so let me use something that would really click in our minds, and that would be the word rotten. Let's read it with that in mind. Rottenness to her that bare him. Here is a son that has lived his life and is living a foolish life. And yet he would serve a rotten meal. A meal of rotten, stenching meat, a meal of rotten watermelon or rotten, moldy strawberries, a meal of a rotten banana that's all black and bruised. And it would be, if to keep a consistent word picture here in our minds, it would be as if the son is coming to the mother and feeding her this rotten meal, this meal where the bread is moldy, the cheese has got mold all over it, and everything else, the drink is expired and tasteless and rotten. And he would serve that to his mother. That's in essence what a foolish son is doing. The incredible statement is to her that bare him. For 9 months she carried him in her womb. She endured the morning sickness and she endured the change of lifestyle and the way she had to go through restrictions and be careful for 9 months as she carried that baby in her womb. Then she went through the pains of delivery. And all the trauma that the mothers in the room understand and know about, and the difficulties and the pains of delivering that child. Then when the child was born, she awoke and fed that child every few hours. For months, caring for that child. She made sure the child's diapers were changed. She made sure that the child was clothed. She made sure to take care of that child. She was up with the child in the middle of the night caring for this child when he was sick. When he was struggling to breathe, when he was struggling with all sorts of ailments and sickness. Here is this mother that bore this child, that gave him life, that contributed so much to life, and he would have such disrespect as a fool to come in appreciation and say, "Here's a meal of rotten food." That's not a happy home. It's a home of heartache. Because here is a child that is so foolish to not realize what the mother had contributed to his life. That she bore him, she gave him life. Look at 19, chapter 19, and verse number 13. Proverbs 19:13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. I want you to imagine for a moment your house. Can you picture it in your mind? The house where you live? Imagine for a moment that tonight while we were at church, a tornado system were to come through the area here and a tornado were to touch down and to hit your home. All of your special papers that you have, your scrapbooks with your pictures in it, your safe with your valuable possessions, your room and all of your clothes that you have so neatly arranged, all the wonderful possessions that you have are picked up by this tornado and spun around there and shot all over Anoka County. They're spread all over. Your house looks like just some little kid just crashed in a Lego castle there. It's in splinters. It's in ruins. That's a calamity. What would it feel like tonight to come home to your house and to see that it looked like that? To see that really the only thing you can do is just to get a big bulldozer and shove it into a pile and burn it or dump it in a dump truck and haul it off to the landfill. What would that feel like? Or imagine here tonight that you were in Colorado, as some of the dear folks are out there. I looked at some of those pictures from the flooding that they are having. Imagine that you had a beautiful, nice little home down by a very picturesque creek. Oh, you could sit on the back deck and throw out the fishing pole and go fishing and stuff. It was so exciting. Maybe downstairs in the basement you had a nice little game and entertainment room, kind of a rec area that was all decorated nice, and you could just relax in that room. And it was furnished with the finest of appliances and beautiful new stove and refrigerator and nice carpet, and oh, it was a beautiful home. But on one particular night, after a few days of rains, the floods were to come up in the creek, and the floods were to wash in through the windows and the doors of that home, and just fill the whole basement and come up onto the second floor of your home, filling it with mud, filling it with scum from the creek and everybody else's home, and water and stench and smell. And you were to walk into that home afterwards, how discouraged would you be? All the work you'd put into building this home and decorating it and preparing it, now it's caked with mud and it's going to have to be ripped out and rebuilt parts of it. You'd be pretty discouraged. Those are calamities. Imagine, on the other hand, imagine a wife that you struggle to get along with. No matter what you try to do, she's not happy. No matter what you try to do to impress her or please her, she's constantly nagging. The husband never seems to get it right. He never seems to say just the right thing. He tries to make her happy, but she constantly complains. "You're so careless. That was dumb. I would never do that. What's wrong with you?" And on she goes, day in and day out. What would it feel like to have a wife that was like that? What would it feel like to go through a calamity that was like that? Tornado or the creek in your home. Now here's the thing. He takes a tornado, as it were. He takes the creek, he takes calamities, and he groups them with a contentious wife, and he says the same thing as that is a foolish son. They're the exact same thing. The calamity, the contentious wife, and the foolish son, he groups them all together, and he says they're all the same thing. The foolish son is going to bring one disaster after another disaster after another disaster to the home. His family is going to go through all sorts of heartache. Look at 19 and verse 26. 19 and verse 26. "He that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causes shame and bringeth reproach." Now, it's a battle scene. Can you picture the battle? Again, like we said, here's the city that's surrounded by the enemy soldiers, and after a period of time, the enemy is able to knock a hole in the wall. They run into the city, and people are yelling and screaming and trying to get away for their lives, and they somehow find a back exit out of the city, and they go running out, and they're trying to find places to hide in the mountains and in other villages and out in the forest to try to get away. They're running for their lives, just trying to get away from the enemy soldiers. The enemy soldiers come into the houses, and they rack everything and waste it and make a mess of it, and they steal whatever they want to and just leave the place in ruin. Just leave the place in shambles. That's what this verse is talking about. But then the people, they start coming back towards the city when the enemy leaves, and they start to see everything and start putting the pieces back together. Naturally, there's a grief. Naturally, there's a frustration and a heartache that's going with it. But then they discover, imagine this, that the very enemy that did such a thing, that chased them out of town, the very enemy that ransacked their house, that stole everything that they had, is their own son. A son that wasteth, it tells us here, his father and chases away his mother. Can you imagine what the heartache would be on the parents for them to have a realization that the person who did this to us was our own son, our own flesh and blood? Imagine the shame that would come to this as someone would come up to him and say, "We heard that an enemy attacked you and you had to go fleeing. Did you find out who it was?" "It was my son." That's the word picture here that he's talking about when he talks about wasting and chasing away. Imagine the shame upon them as they would have to give the answer, "That was our own son." But imagine the shame upon the son for people to find out, "You did that to your parents? That's your mom and you treated her like that? That's your dad and you treated her like that, or treated him like that?" Imagine the shame that would be upon the son as well. This is not a happy home, but a home filled with heartache. Let's go to Proverbs 23 in verse number 15. Proverbs 23 and verse 15. "My son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine." Very simply said, that the heart of the child directly impacts the heart of the parents. how the heart is. Do they have a tender heart? Do they have a wise heart that receives instruction and changes their life? If they have a hard heart, it's going to directly impact the hearts of the parents. Let's look at another one. Look down at verse 24. 23, 24. He saith unto the... Excuse me, I'm in chapter 24. Let me go back to the other one here. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. Our text here says that they will greatly rejoice. Not just that they will rejoice, but they will greatly rejoice. When will they greatly rejoice? When their kids are doing what is right. When they're doing what is righteous in God's sight, it tells us here in verse number 24. When they're doing what is right. Great rejoicing. They're having joy. There's gladness. And she'll rejoice as well. Look at 27. We'll look at a few more here. Chapter 27 and verse number 11. Proverbs 27, verse 11. My son, be wise and make my heart glad. Watch this now, that I may answer him that reproacheth me. That I may answer him that reproacheth me. This verse tells me that how goes in the home directly impacts the public life as well. How the father is treated in public is directly impacted by how it's going on in the home. Others may criticize him. The father's reputation in the community, in the church, in the workplace, on the field, are largely impacted by what's going on at home and how his children are doing. Happiness in the home brings happiness in other places. People would reproach him. People would criticize the father. But if his children are doing what is right, then he has an answer to that. Makes an incredible difference. Look over at Proverbs 28:7. Read a few more here. Proverbs 28:7. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. He that keeps the law. Surely we understand this referring to God's laws in that sense here. And it may, especially in this passage and in this context, referring to the instructions that the father would give regarding friends. Who the kid should hang out with. Because the next line of the verse talks about riotous men, his companions, his friends here. And so here the father has given instruction, and a wise son will obey or keep that father's instruction. He'll listen to what his dad is saying. He'll be a wise son, he'll listen. But on the other hand is the foolish son, we know that. The opposite of wise is foolish. And here's what happens. He's a companion of riotous men. He hangs out with the wrong kind of friends. The word riotous refers to people that are gluttons. They just pig out all the time. Drunkards. Lazy people. And Proverbs even associates such people with immoral women. The idea is that these are sons that hang out with a bunch of other guys, and their goal in life is just to party and to have fun and whatever they think about doing in life. And you look at this lifestyle of hanging out with immoral women and drinking and being a lazy glutton and a drunkard here. And you think, how is it possible that a person could live that way? Because they started back here as a boy doing whatever they felt like doing. And it grew and grew and grew. And now what they feel like doing is living the immoral life and living the drunkard's life and hanging out with other people that just do what they want to do. That's the sense here. And it brings great disgrace. He shames his father. His dad will be embarrassed because he's hanging with that kind of friends. Look over at 29 and verse 3. There's good news. There's only 31 chapters and we're in 29, so you're almost there, all right? 29 and verse 3. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father. You want happiness in home? Love wisdom. But he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. The exact opposite of happiness in the home is a home in which the son begins to hang out with immoral women here, harlots, prostitutes. And Proverbs is very clear. Look at chapter 5, 6, and 7, not now, on your own sometime. And it describes very graphically the cost of the immoral woman. It costs a great deal. And he says, listen, if you begin to hang out with the wrong friends in chapter 28 and with the wrong kind of girls in chapter 29 and begin to give yourself to all that, it's going to cost you and you're going to be spending your dad's money. He invested in you. He poured himself into you. He may have given you things that you'll have to sell to pay the bills for that. He's poured his life into you and you're going to spend it by living in immorality. What a tragedy. What a heartache in the home. A couple more here. Look at verses 15 and 17, and we'll be done with Proverbs. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Verse 17, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. And here these last two Proverbs lay the responsibility for happiness on the home right back on our shoulders as parents. They tell us that it's our responsibility as parents to provide the physical rod of discipline, to provide the verbal reproof, to provide the act of correction to bringing them back into the way of righteousness so that we can avoid shame and have a life of rest, to have a life of delight. It tells us we cannot leave the children to themselves. We can't be so busy that we can't supervise them. We can't guide our children. It means that there are going to be times when we're going to have to stop what we're doing instead of leaving them alone to guide them and direct them in the way. We're going to have to put down the newspaper, put down our book, put down our work to spend time with them. We can't let them just make their own choices because we're too busy to guide and direct them in their life. And sometimes we may say, you know, if I just let them do what they want to do, then everything will be happy. And yet Proverbs tells us, listen, if you leave them to themselves, it'll bring heartache. It won't bring happiness in the long run. Child left to himself bringeth his father and mother to shame. It'll be worse off for everyone in the long run. So happiness in the home, as we look at Proverbs, is not about how much money your family has in the bank. It's not about how fancy of a family vacation you take. Happiness in the home is not about you getting every toy that you want for Christmas or being able to give the greatest presents. It's not about having the greatest luxury. Happiness in the home is about parents following the Bible's instruction and children receiving correction like they're supposed to be doing so that they'll be wise children. Now in conclusion here, I just want to bring out two thoughts from all of this. As we've read through all of the verses on this theme tonight, we notice, first of all, there's a motivation to it. These verses motivate me to be a good parent. And these verses ought to motivate children to be wise children. It ought to do it. They motivate us because we see how much this happiness impacts our lives. This happiness impacts fathers, it impacts mothers, it impacts your possessions, it impacts your wealth, it impacts, we've seen, your heart and your soul, it impacts even your public relations. Other people would disgrace you or reproach you because of the difficulties of it. It impacts that. Therefore, it's a motivation we want to have this happiness. It also motivates us because of the emotions. Sorrow, joy, grief, gladness, reproach, rest, rejoicing, great rejoicing, delight, shame, and heaviness. Those are the things that are at stake if we live as foolish or wise people. Those are the things that are at stake if we do a good job parenting versus if we don't. But then number two, not only the motivation, but then the method. We see that it is connected to wisdom and foolishness. It's connected to correcting our children versus neglecting them. It's connected to promoting purity versus immorality. Godly friends versus riotous men. Righteous living versus evil living. Valuing other people and things versus wasting them. Embracing others or chasing them away. It tells us that we have to have a proper home if we're going to have a happy home. And in case we think this is only in Proverbs, John tells us, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Psalms tells us in Psalm 127, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is His reward. It would be a great blessing. God intends for us to have great happiness in the home. A friend of ours made a comment regarding some pictures, kind of sort of a caption under some pictures of her children. It's a comment that we as parents often relate to, a comment that we as children perhaps might cause our parents to make as well. This friend said this, "These are our kids, our pride, our joy, our frustration, our sleepless nights, our agony, our gleam in our eye." And you know, we pray that we as parents would do such a good job of rearing our children that it would focus more on the pride and joy than the frustration and the agony. God, in His wisdom and discernment, has given us the manual here to tell us how to have a happy home. And it falls on the shoulders initially of the parents to rear wise children. But then it falls upon the shoulders of the children to receive that instruction and to become wise children, to listen and to be changed, that there might be happiness in the home.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.